back. You looked oh so lovely. I wondered if I got to know you, if you might be the one for me. Next time you're feeling kinda lonely, just pick up the phone and give me a call. And you can be my special lady.
What's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of the Tariq Elite Radio Show. And I am broadcasting live in Birmingham, Alabama, family. I just finished my lecture tour, and I'm chilling in Birmingham. I'll be here for a couple of days, but I'm chilling, and we're going to chop up some real quick game on tonight's show. What we're going to do right now, though, we're going to take a very quick commercial break, family. And when I get back, we're going to chop up some good game right here on the Tariq Elite Radio Show. Today's show is brought to you by LegendaryMix.com. Are you a recording artist, music producer, independent label? That message is for you. LegendaryMix.com. If you are in need of a professional mix down, an amazing mastering job, or both, they can deliver. With over 13 years of experience, you can expect radio quality. Go to LegendaryMix.com or call or text them at 347-565-5892.
Yo, check out my man Kevin Gentry and his website, BecomeRichFamousFast.com. Kevin has a one-on-one private school coaching website, and he will teach you everything you need to know about the game. And you can call him directly at 404-207-5640. Call Kevin up, and he will teach you everything you need to know about being a true player and having real, real tight game. So check out BecomeRichFamousFast.com.
Hey, what's up? It's dating and life coach Mr. Locario. Go to badboymembership.com and master the dating game by joining my Bad Boy Membership Program. In this program, you'll receive 45 through 90 minute, easy to follow, step-by-step dating advice tutorials that's guaranteed to help you attract, date, and have sex with beautiful women. Join the Bad Boy Membership today by going to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
Martin was king, Malcolm was militant, but Stokely was power. Witness the young Stokely Carmichael expound on the philosophy of black power as he prepares for a standoff with police during the March Against Fear. Power, Stokely Carmichael, is a blistering solo one-man show by actor-playwright Michon Lebrun. This world premiere opens July 11th at the Eastman Studios of Gallaudet University, Washington, D.C. For tickets and showtime, go to capitalfringe.org or call 866-811-4111.
You are now tuning in to the king of games, Tariq Elite, on Tariq Elite Radio.
What's going on, fam? We are back. Welcome back to the Tariq Elite Radio Show. And I am your gracious host. This is Mr. Tariq Elite Nasheed. And I am chilling live in Birmingham, Alabama. It's real rainy out here right now, so you guys might hear some thundering and lightning. And I hope I don't get swooped up in one of these southern tornadoes, because it looks like a tornado cloud is forming outside. But I'm ready to chop up some good game. I hope everybody goes to TariqElite.com and get that fresh gear. We got some brand new t-shirts coming soon, so you guys stay tuned for that. Don't forget to go to Hidden Colors Film and get Hidden Colors 1, 2, and 3. Ladies and gentlemen. Now, I just completed the Code of Conduct Tour, family, and I want to thank everybody who came out to participate and join me in the Code of Conduct Tour around the country. I had an absolute blast. I enjoyed meeting everybody. All of the venues were packed houses. I got to network with a lot of good brothers and sisters out there. The Melanoid family was heavy. I like to thank Philly. Philly, that was my first time coming to Philly to do a lecture. Philly represented. Take my hat off to Philly. Atlanta was off the chain, as it always is. Every time I come to Atlanta, that wasn't a surprise. Atlanta always represents. I had some of the most fun in Atlanta. And Detroit. And I'm going to talk about, and we had a great time in Detroit. My family came. Detroit was great. I want to talk about some things that happened in Detroit that I touched on some of the stuff on Ustream, but I'll get on some of that in a minute. I want to talk about the Detroit venue, and that's going to tie into the theme of today's show. But I want to touch on some other things that's going on in the news and media right now. Right now, they're investigating Sandra Bland's death. It was a young sister who went down to Texas to start a new job. They said that the sister was found hung in a jail cell. They said that she committed suicide, and that was real suspect. A lot of people don't believe that. Now there is a video that has come out of the police officer's dash cam of them basically roughing her up. The stop seems very strange, almost like this sister was targeted to a certain degree. A lot of the stuff seems strange, and a lot of the videos, some parts of the video has been doctored, some parts have been cut out. Real funny style stuff going on. But I can't reiterate the fact enough that we have to start really, really being careful and understanding that we are in a system called white supremacy. And in that system, and I'm going to say it a million times, I've said it a million times, I'm going to say it a million more times, black people, melanoid people living under the system of white supremacy, we are one traffic stop away from becoming a hashtag on Twitter. There was another black man in Ohio, and he was shot in the head by a cop. He was pulled over for not having a front license plate, and the cop ended up shooting him in the head, unarmed black man. So we got to understand, we have race soldiers out here. This is Jim Crow 2.0. You can't coon your way out of the situation. Stephen A. Smith, shout out to Stephen A. Smith, because a lot of people are getting on his case. We've already put Stephen A. Smith on the coon train a year ago. He came out talking about, well, we shouldn't talk about Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. And then he was getting his ticket on the coon train. And again, I'm not a big fan of the whole Black Lives Matter movement, because I know that that movement is funded by the white supremacists, and they're funded to dissipate the energy and the focus off systematic white supremacy and tangible things to do to combat that system and protect ourselves from that system. So I've always been funny style about the whole Black Lives Matter movement, but I digress. But the coon train is getting real full lately. The coon train is getting very full, and that's a reaction to the fear of dealing with a system of white supremacy. So we're going to have to learn ways to empower ourselves and not be so fearful and thinking that cooning is going to be the answer, because the ancestors are retaliating against the coons. There was this one guy, I think his name is Anthony Hervey. He was down here in Birmingham. And by the way, there was another black girl here in Birmingham who was found hung in a cell. They said she killed herself. So there's this pattern here. These suspected white supremacists seems like they are lynching us and using the same excuses. Because even if they so-called killed themselves in jail, why did they not check on these people? How did they leave paraphernalia in the cell where they could kill themselves? Because jail cells are supposed to be set up where you cannot kill yourself. And I've been to jail before. Jail cells are designed for you to not be able to swing a rope or swing some kind of noose or swing some kind of apparatus around that you can hang on. Jail cells are designed to prevent that. So when you put a person in jail for like a random traffic stop, they sit up and find a way in a jail cell to hang themselves. That's already funny style right there. I'm telling you, that's some funny style shit for you to be able to figure that out that soon. So it really, really sounds like there's some race soldiers at work here. But there was a guy, Anthony Hervey, he was a known coon. I'm just calling it like it is. This guy has written books talking about black people and the welfare state and the end of niggerism. I mean, he's the real life Uncle Ruckus. This dude, if you think you've seen some Jesse Lee Peterson buck dancing and all these other, and Crispy and all these other people, you haven't seen Coonan until you've seen Anthony Hervey. Now, a few days ago, Anthony Hervey was at a pro-Confederate flag rally out here in Alabama. He was like the only black guy there, and he was giving a speech talking about the flag ain't racist and how he's proud of the flag, and black people and liberals and Democrats are just trying to play the race card. I mean, he was really buck dancing it up for the white supremacists, and all the white supremacists are there clapping and patting him on the head. And I'm looking at that like, oh my God, this dude has just doubled down on the Coonan. Now, when he left that event, he got into a car accident. He lost control of his vehicle. The car flipped over and he got killed. Now, I'm not saying anybody should get harmed, but and the story was, because he was in the car with another black female who was a Confederate flag supporter, and she said, and I don't know how true this is, because again, when you have black people who are cooning and buck dancing for white supremacy, you don't know what they'll do. They will lie. They will do anything, because sitting up here acting like you're cool with white supremacy, that's living a lie. Sitting up here talking about what about black on black crime, and I'm tired of black folk making excuses, and all white peoples ain't bad. That's you. That's a nigga living a lie. So if they'll lie about that, they'll lie about other stuff. So the black female said their car turned over because there was another car of black males antagonizing and yelling at Anthony. And that made him swerve off the road. Now, I don't know how true that is. That could be something they made up. The white supremacists, because the coons know what white supremacists want to hear. So that could be some contrived story to make up for the fact that the dude just lost control of his car. But who knows? The reason why he lost control of his car, who knows? We do know that this person was a known coon and he ended up getting killed. And I'm not condoning anybody getting killed, but the ancestors are waking up. That was karma. The ancestors are waking up to that shameless, blasphemous cooning that a lot of y'all out here doing. Because it's one thing for the white supremacists to act the way they act, because they're in the game for survival, which is not justified to you misharming and harming people and mistreating people for ego gratification, as Neely Fuller says, and also for genetic survival. Harming people for that, that's not an honorable thing to do. But for a black person to co-sign that, that's just blasphemous. And the ancestors are not happy. I think the ancestors sent up some Kundalini energy and took dude out. And I'm not celebrating the death of anybody, but if you antagonize people, and that's what a lot of these dudes do, these coons, they get around the white supremacists, and the white supremacists kind of pay them off to antagonize black audiences. Because this Antonio guy, Anthony, I keep calling him Antonio, Anthony guy was known to walk around with these signs and, you know, these very antagonistic signs towards black people. He was the go-to coon. And that type of stuff is shameful. And if you keep doing stuff like that, some of that shit might backfire. And that goes for the white supremacists too. There were some white supremacists out there in South Carolina, some Klan members, they were protesting and they were pro-Confederate flag, and a couple of brothers caught them slipping and gave them that work. So a couple of the Klan members were catching L's. But let's not have a symbolic victory so soon, because the system of white supremacy is still firmly in place. So we got to come up with ways to get rid of that system and replace it with a system of justice and protect ourselves until we do that. Because that's the name of the game. But that coon thing, that a lot of black folks think they want to do. You want to hop on that train for protection. And I get it. You live in a system of white supremacy and you don't know how to get rid of that system. You don't know how to stop the system. You don't know how to protect yourself from the system, because we're getting killed like sitting ducks out here. And a lot of us just don't know what to do about it. So a lot of black people think, okay, well, fuck it. Let me just coon and I'll probably get my lottery number hidden. And it's just not going to work like that. They're getting the coons too. So we got to understand the game, family. And these race soldiers, there's a whole system out here to protect these race soldiers. There was a case down in Chicago. There was a brother named, I think his name is Lorenzo Davis. And Lorenzo was a police investigator, an independent police investigator. You know, whenever black people get killed and they always say, well, we're going to have an independent police investigation. They always say that. Understand this, family. Those independent police investigators are on the take. Those independent police investigators, their job is basically to go in and justify the killing. Their job, those so-called independent, they are not independent at all. They're in the back pockets of the police unions. Their job is to go in and justify these race soldiers harming and killing you. And this one guy out of Chicago, he was a police investigator, and he admitted, he was like, hey, we're basically forced to clear police officers after they shoot people. We're forced to do it. And this brother, he stood up and we need to send this brother a donation. Y'all hit up melanoidnation.org, kick in some, because we're going to send that brother a little donation to support him, because we're going to have to start supporting black people and melanoid people around the world who stand up to white supremacy, and white supremacy tries to economic strangleholds. So we got to come up with ways to support these people even more. I do the best that I can, like daycare centers and things like that. But I want to support this brother and help him out until he gets himself together and gets another form of employment. But this brother said that what they do, they go in and they investigate, and even if they find discrepancies, the people on top tell them, hey, change your report. And this brother didn't want to change a report. There was a case recently where six officers, they unjustly shot somebody, and he didn't want to clear them because he did an investigation. And he was like, hey, these dudes are, they kind of guilty, man. They unjustly shot somebody. So I can't, my conscience is not going to let me clear these people. So he got fired. So since he got fired, he blowing the whistle on everybody. So I want y'all to look up that story. His name is Lorenzo Davis. Let me make sure that's his name. And he's out of Chicago. And the reason behind, he showed his termination letter to the news. And the reason why they said they fired him, they said supervising investigator Davis is the only supervisor at the Independent Police Review Authority who resist making requested changes as direct management. You got it? So they didn't basically admitted that, okay, we fired this nigga because he ain't doing what we're telling him to do. He's not changing the reports like we're telling him to change them. So understand, it's not just about police brutality. We got to stop looking at these race soldiers harming black people as a police brutality issue. Because when you're talking about police brutality, the white supremacists, they think 20 steps ahead of you. They're going to say, okay, well, what we're going to do, since you black people said it's about police brutality, we're going to spend more money on sensitivity training, because we're going to have to learn how to not be so brutal. But you're only being so-called brutal to black people, and it ain't because of fear. There was a white dude who had a video out recently. It's on Facebook, and he told some real shit. He was like, look, black people, and the guy, you know, I don't know, he's a suspected white supremacist, but, you know, he's one of those liberal ones. And he was like, well, you know, look, black people, you know, I got black friends or whatever, but y'all got to understand this, white people are not afraid of you. See, black people got this thing with them. Y'all just scared. And this is his words. And black people do. We have this thing where we believe that the white supremacists are fearful of us. See, there's a fear of genetic annihilation, you know, on a subconscious level. And that's on a subconscious level. But on a conscious surface level, the white supremacists are not scared of you, black people. You're not afraid of people that you're in control over. They know good and well they have total control over you. They understand this. They know they have you under control. They know they can get on that phone and make up any excuse to get you taken out in 3 seconds flat. They know this. There's no fear there. No, we kind of get around the white supremacists and walk around big and bad and all that. They know one phone call, they can just say, hey, there's a big black nigga here. He got a gun. I'm scared. Come get him. There's no fear there at all. And this guy, the white guy, was saying, well, you know, because if there's going to be a race war, man, we can take you guys out. Y'all saw what we did in Ferguson, and you saw what the law enforcement did in Baltimore, you know, with the military tanks and all that. I mean, they could take you out if they really wanted to. And if there was a race war, man, you guys would be in real big trouble. And I disagree a little bit with the guy. Now, I agree that the white supremacists are not fearful of black folks. I agree with that. But the thing is, the one up that you have on black people is that black people simply don't realize that you are already waging a war on them. Most black people don't understand that concept. There is already a race war. The race war has already been waged. There is a race war, and we're losing the race war big time. But a lot of black folks really don't understand and believe that we're in a race war. You don't want to believe that. But here's the kicker. Once we do realize that, it ain't going to be as an easy win as you think it's going to be. You understand? That's the thing. And that's what the white supremacists understand too. They know that you have to be more covert, because now when you let us know that there's a war, it'll be back like we had going on in the 1960s when black people knew the shit was going down. They knew that they were under attack. It was no question. They knew that they were being racially profiled and that the white supremacists were coming for them. Black people stood the fuck up and rose up and started fighting back and started shooting back. In some of these major cities, they were bucking and sniping at the cops. They were burning shit down. When black folks knew what the deal was, it was on and popping. When you knew there was a war, it was on and popping. Even with the small population of black people, that voodoo spirit came through. And that's the thing. The white supremacists, they know, okay, we got these people. It's a small number of them. But when they get on the same page with each other and retaliate and understand that they are being attacked, we don't know. They're kind of unpredictable. Just like in Haiti. Haiti, they were going up against the biggest army in the world at the time, Napoleon's army. Once they realized that it was war, all of the people on that island got together, the black people, and beat the mightiest army in the world. So that's the kicker. When black people understand that there's a war, y'all don't know how this shit is going to go. It can be very unpredictable. But I digress, ladies and gentlemen. Now, there's a lot of other stuff that's happening in the news, family, a lot of stuff that's happening in the media. The Meek Mills and Drake thing. Now, the rapper Meek Mills had a series of tweets yesterday, kind of just out the blue, shitting on people. And particularly the rapper Drake. Meek Mill was talking about, well, you know what? Drake don't write his rhymes. And he start talking about Nicki Minaj's ex-dude. And you're just kind of throwing shots at everybody. So I don't know what that was about. Now, I like Meek Mill. When I was in Philly, I heard a lot of Meek Mill stuff on the radio. Philly has a lot of love for Meek Mill. And the shit was hot. It was a lot of hot cuts on the album. But I think this whole Twitter thing is a bad look for Meek because it makes it seem like my man was kind of pussy-whooped. Because my man was talking about Nicki. He was like, yeah, can't nobody... Well, he said something to the effect of, ain't nobody going to be giving lap dances because I think Meek Mill criticized Nicki Minaj's ex-dude for letting Nicki Minaj give dudes lap dances while she was dating him. And Meek was saying something to the effect of, well, anybody date me, I ain't letting them do all that shit like that. So, and I'm not dwelling on this too long, but I'm just saying Meek Mill, Meek, that's not a good look, man. I know Joe Budden, the rapper, said, hey, Meek is kind of, you know, he's kind of cupcaking a little bit. And Meek kind of went at Joe Budden. And I understand Joe Budden to a certain degree because now when you come out, you date Nicki Minaj and then you just all of a sudden coming at everybody on some aggressive shit, look like that pussy got to you. That's what it looks like. That looks like some good pussy and just made a nigga go crazy. Sometimes when a dude can get some good cooch, niggas lose their mind. Niggas start talking crazy. When a nigga gets some good cooch, he start cutting off all his friends. Niggas start trying new drugs. Nigga get on Twitter. Nigga fuck Drake. Fuck Young Money. Fuck Cash Money. Fuck Def Jam. Fuck Def Row. Fuck Fetty Wap, nigga. You know, he just shitting on that random people just for the sake of shitting on them. So Meek, bruh, let's keep it player. Let's keep it player. Dude, let's keep it player. Just do you, man. You don't have to do all that, man. You got the skills. You got the talent, man. You got the music. You got the tracks. You won't need to do all that extracurricular shit, man, to really get your stuff floating correctly. And don't get pussy whoop. Whoop that pussy. My God. Because a lot of these dudes out here now, man, a lot of the young cats, there's a lot of emotion that they wear on their sleeve. Especially when it comes to dating some of these females. My man Chris Brown. I love Chris Brown, but Chris Brown was doing the same thing with that Karrueche young lady. And Karrueche is in a movie called Sharknado 3. I want to see that tonight, see her acting skills. But Chris Brown was doing the same thing. Him and Karrueche broke up because Chris is out here having babies and all types of stuff. And Karrueche, rightfully so, said, hey, I'm cool on all this shit. You know, you can't blame her. You can't blame her. But, you know, Chris was trying to bogart himself back into the relationship and trying to scream on niggas taking pictures with Karrueche. Karrueche took a picture with the model Tyson Beckford, and Chris is kind of low-key throwing threats at dude, and Chris got his friends throwing threats at dude. I mean, that was a bad look, man. Very bad look. You don't do that, man. You got to keep it player. Don't make it seem like a pussy got you all out your mind like that. That's pussy. There's more of it. Good Lord. It's only pussy. And speaking of Chris Brown, Chris Brown, they robbed Chris Brown's house. Man, where's Chris? I hope Chris is listening to me. I hope Chris is listening to me, Chris. Because Chris has surrounded himself with like certain gang members. I think he's bought himself into a gang in order to get street cred and I guess a little protection in the streets. But Chris, understand this, dude. I came up in LA, bro. You can't buy yourself into a gang, man. You either got to be down or not down. If you buy yourself into a gang, certain people internally are going to look at you as food, man. And they're going to get at you, and that's what happened. Those dudes you're surrounding yourself with, those dudes set you up, my dude. The way they robbed his house, it was so clear that they set him up. Basically, Chris Brown was at like a club in LA. While he was at the club, and he has a brand new house that he bought, cats ran up in his house with the guns and put like his aunt or somebody in a closet at gunpoint, and they were looking for specific things. So in that area he lives in Tarzana, I know where that area is. It's not really gated, so you know, cats can just roll up to it and just hop your fence and just get on up in there. So it was the niggas that you roll with. The fact that they knew that you wouldn't be home, they knew that you didn't have any pets or any kind of guard dogs at the house. Because, see, niggas know how to case out shit. You're not going to run up in a spot that you're not too familiar with unless you're on the pipe. So dudes case out shit. You're not just going to jump a random wall to go up in somebody's house without knowing, okay, this motherfucker might have a pit bull some Dobermans behind here. He might have something popping. So it was an inside job. These niggas that you done paid off as your gang banging affiliates, these dudes set you up, man. And that's what them niggas do. I know how LA niggas get down. They smile in your face and they were plotting on your ass all the time. They sitting up, you got them all up in your house, and that's another thing, man. You can't have them gangsters up in your house like that. You keep niggas at arm's length. Because they will get at you. If they see an opportunity to get at you, they getting at you, dude. So, man, just take that. Take that advice and roll with it, man. Sometimes dudes gotta stop being emotional and take some real G advice. And that brings me to the situation with my lecture in Detroit. Now, I talked about this a little bit on Ustream this Sunday. Now, Sunday, we talked about my lecture that I had on Saturday in Detroit at the Southfield Civic Center. The lecture was great. It was packed. Everybody enjoyed what was popping. Everything went good. Now, there was some janky stuff that happened initially. The lecture could have been more, it could have been executed more smoothly. But everybody enjoyed it. Not too many complaints. It was one or two complaints to me because a couple of people had trouble finding the venue. Well, I won't say a couple, quite a few people had trouble finding the venue. There were some other things people were complaining about. Some of the other speakers that were before me, people kind of got bored with them. Some people were saying, well, they were speaking too long. So there were a lot of stuff that was basically out of my hands that people were complaining about. But overall, people really enjoyed the lecture. I came through. People loved my part. But the thing is, I take all responsibility for what happened. And nothing happened bad. I'm not saying anything happened bad, but it should have been executed a little bit better, because basically with this one, I work with a promoter. When I went to Philly, I worked with a promoter. There was a sister who was thorough. On top of it, everything went off without a hitch. When my lecture in Atlanta popped off, I did that without a promoter. Now, we did that. We promoted that ourselves, so everything went off without a hitch. And we used this gentleman named Lou. And I'm bringing Lou's name up, and I want to talk about what went down on Sunday when I mentioned Lou. Because after my lecture on Saturday, Lou kind of knew some things were a little janky. When I was leaving the venue, Lou was like, hey, man, don't go in on me too hard. And I wasn't going to go in on the brother too hard. I was going to give constructive criticism like I did. Because when I did my show Sunday on Ustream, I talked about how, well, you know, the show went well. Everything was cool. The promoters were cool. Now, they could have been tighter with how they handled business, because my man Lou was late. We didn't do a sound check. They tried to give me a janky dressing room. It was just a lot of stuff. And I was trying to be constructive by saying, hey, man, next time you got to step it up a little bit. You know, when you're promoting an event, you got to be thorough. You got to just be on top of your game if you're a promoter. And I'm sending this message out to other potential promoters. Just be thorough when you're doing an event. So I'm talking and I'm being constructive. I was just going to say that and just kind of let it go. Then my man texted me while I was live on air. He was like, oh, man, people texting me saying you throwing dirt on me. So now that rubbed me the wrong way. That rubbed me the wrong way, because now my dude is getting sensitive. Man, you beating up on me. Okay. Now the dude is getting sensitive. Instead of saying, hey, you know what you're saying, that's right. Let me, you know, this is my first event. That's what you're supposed to say. Hey, you know what? This is my first event. I'm going to do better next time. And then you just chop it up and you roll out with it. Like the young lady, man, when I was in Philly, there was a sister. They gave me some of her cake. I've been promoting the sister's cakes like crazy. And the cakes were good when I was trying to promote her website, and the sister didn't have a real website. And the website she did have, it was kind of difficult to find. And I was like, okay, here's some constructive criticism. Sister, you got to get your website together. It has to be an easy website. It can't be that difficult to navigate. You got to market your stuff. So I'm giving constructive criticism. And the sister called up and she was like, hey, you know what, Tariq? You're right. Off the rip, you know what? You're right. I got to get it together, and I'm getting it together. And the sister, cool in the gang. But the thing is, a lot of brothers, man, it gets into this ego thing, which causes a lot of brothers to do things half-ass. It's this thing where niggas want to get a C for effort. And that really rubbed me the wrong way about my man Lou. And Lou kind of said, well, you could have told me privately, but y'all have to understand, I talked to Lou privately, the promoter of the Detroit lecture. And again, the lecture it wasn't a bad lecture. It just wasn't a top-notch, up-to-par Tariq Nasheed event. Because I like my people to be in very nice settings. I like for everything to be easy. So it's like James Brown. I'm like him. James Brown was almost a perfectionist. Like, you go to a James Brown concert and you're the audience, you're like, okay, that was a great concert, but James Brown is backstage checking people on not hitting their notes right, not hitting their cues right. You know, people, a lot of the band members would think they were okay, but he was like, hey man, you didn't hit this hard enough, you didn't do this, so you got to make it tight. You got to be on top of it all the way, because if you slip now, you're going to keep on slipping. So, you know, we don't want no slip-ups. But my man, I was just trying to give him some constructive criticism about what he needs to do if he's going to try to do events. Just kind of step it up a little bit more. And the dude got sensitive. And he wouldn't call the show. And again, he was like, I ended up calling him. Because he wouldn't call the show. So I called him and he was like, well, you know, I feel like you're throwing dirt on me. You could have called me privately. You could have said this privately. And I talked to the brother privately. I told him, I don't say things to people on air that I won't say off the air. I told the dude I didn't like how shit was going down. It was janky and fucked up. I told him that. And even in the emails, there's several emails that I went back and forth with the guy about stuff that I disagreed with. So I was telling this dude constantly about stuff I didn't want to do, stuff that I didn't want to allow. I'm not going to go into that here. I'm not going to go into that because I'm trying to make an overall point. But this is one of the kind of guys, and there's a lot of dudes like that out here, where you try to talk to him and basically the dude just gives you a bunch of excuses. Because every time I would try to talk to this promoter, I call him up, hey man, where are you? Because there's we're sitting out here waiting on the venue to open. Me and my crew, we get there on time. He was late showing up, which was a red flag. Promoters are never supposed to be late. You're supposed to be the first one there, the last one to leave. So I'm sitting up in the parking lot in a car, hot, people coming up to me. I'm trying to get in my dressing room, get ready. There's no sound check, nothing. So my man is like 30, 45 minutes late. So I'm calling him like, hey man, where you at? Well, what happened was, it's that type of shit. Well, I had gave these people my money and they were supposed to open the door. And then I had gave them some extra money and man, I'm gonna have to get my money back. So he's giving me, I'm talking to the dude and he's giving me these, that single mother shit. You know how dudes who are raised with single mothers in a Section 8 home, it was sounding like that. The dude was just making up. And every time I would say, hey man, what's the deal with this? What's the deal with that? I would get some long drawn out bullshit excuse that I don't really like hearing. I'm not in the excuse business. I tell people that all the time. I don't want people sitting up giving me a bunch of excuses on why they're not handling business. I don't want to hear it, to be honest. Well, what happened was I don't want to hear that, man. Especially when it's clearly some shit he's making up on the spot. That's that shit. I can tell this dude was probably raised by a Section 8 single mother. He heard Section 8 single mother shit all of his life. You know how those Section 8 single mothers, they learn how to come up with sad sob story excuses. Well, I can't feed my babies because the lights are off and then my water got turned off and then I lost my job and then my shoe fell off and I hurt my leg and had to get disability, so I need to get Section 8 to feed my babies. It's that type of shit. He had that type of sound that I'm not in the business of hearing. I don't want to hear it. Just handle business. You know, I was trying to constructively talk to my man like that. But he called up, kind of on some immature shit. Well, you know what? You know, I don't really care though. You know, everything went cool. It was a success, so I don't really care. It was that type of thing, and that further was kind of rubbing me the wrong way. His whole attitude was basically, well, you know, we got our money, you got your money, you know, I got my money, so shit, I don't even care. And that's the thing that really, really rubbed me the wrong way. Because that's that smash and grab mentality. See, a lot of us, especially black males, and I'm getting on the brothers in a constructive way, you can't do everything like a smash and grab. Just run in there, grab as much money as you can, and just say, fuck everything. Fuck all the glass that you left on the floor. Fuck all the bullets that you've left. Just fuck everything. Just as long as you get as much as you can right there, that's the only thing that matters. That's that smash and grab street corner shit. And you can't get down like that. If you're going to do business, do legitimate, straight up and down business. Even though the event was a success, I was letting my man know for future reference, hey man, step it up so you can just be thorough with what you do. And he was kind of like, well, you know, I ain't really no promoter anyway. So I'm like, okay, well, dude, if that's the attitude you have, and I'm saying this to every potential promoter, if you just kind of doing shit just to be doing it, find somebody else who has the time for that. Because me, people like me, I build brands. And with the flippant attitude like that, and the I don't care, and the, well, I got my money, so all that shit don't matter. When you say that, to me, that's basically saying, well, fuck the audience. I got what I got out of them, so fuck them. The event was cool. We got our money. I don't think in those terms, man. That's very disrespectful to the audience. And you gotta respect your customers, especially my audience. You gotta respect the audience. I'm real big on that. You gotta respect my audience, because that's my audience that showed up. And understand this, and I'm talking to all you potential promoters out there. I don't need a promoter. I do not need a promoter at all. I don't need a promoter. I get promoters, or I allow people to come in and promote, because they have one job. Their job is to basically make my job easier, because my crew, my staff, we know how to promote events ourselves. The thing is, what we like doing with dealing with promoters locally, they know more about the venues and the areas that we know. So that saves us time from researching different areas, finding an event, seeing if we can gain a rapport with the venue. So most of the time, a lot of local promoters, they have a rapport with certain venues that they can get easy. So we don't have to do all the research and all the legwork looking for a venue. That's really the only reason we need a promoter. The only reason. Because see, back in the day, when people would promote concerts or any type of events, the promoter would get the venue cracking, and the promoter would get out there, and they had a street team to pass out flyers and all that. And the promoters knew how to go into radio because they had somebody at the local radio station that they had an in with, so you can promote it that way. Well, times have changed now, because now you don't really need street teams to go out and pass out flyers anymore, because now you have social media. So that's your flyers already out there. That's why you don't see people passing out flyers like that no more. You got social media, so that's covered. We can do that. Radio is not the same as it used to be, because a lot of these local promoters, they don't have an in with the radio stations, because a lot of radio stations are corporate owned and nationally syndicated. So if I'm in Memphis, the morning show might be Tom Joyner, Steve Harvey, or Ricky Smiley, who's in a totally different city. So radio has changed, but I already have my own media, my podcast and my other shows. So that's the radio that we need. So I already have that covered. So I'm already bringing in an audience. Now they can help, and it's the icing on the cake if they do have an in with certain radio stations. That's the icing on the cake. But usually, that's why when we do cities and go to do, when I do lectures, I really don't do too much local radio. It's sold out before I even get to the city, because we've already promoted it on my show and on social network. So again, the only job a promoter really has is to find a cool venue and make sure the venue is up to par. That's really the only job they have. So when I deal with a promoter who don't even do that, I'm like, okay, well, goddamn. That's, you got one job. Make sure the venue ain't janky. You think, make sure the venue is up to par. Make sure I got a dressing room and not a broom closet. That's your one thing. And also make sure that the audience is going to be comfortable and taken care of. That's my biggest concern. You got to respect your audience. You got to respect your customers. And I have the utmost respect for my audience. And my man, Lou, the promoter, and I know you're listening, Lou, that's really the only problem I have with you. You, the attitude, the way you came off was kind of on the phone with me after the show. It was like very disrespectful to the audience. Like, okay, fuck them. I got my money. And I don't get down like that because I build a brand. And I treat my audience as if they're my guest in my home. I treat my audience like they're my home guests. This is why I like people to be in a nice, comfortable setting. I like for them to be in nice, soft seats, air-conditioned venue, nice and roomy. I don't want people having to stand up, because I've done lectures before and people, it would be so packed. People would be sitting on the floor, sitting on the stairs, and I felt horrible. So I go out of my way to make sure my audience is comfortable. Because see, we black folks, we got to stop getting in the habit of dealing with each other on a janky bootleg level. We think, okay, well, these are black folks, so they used to bootleg shit. Let them sit up in some bootleg shit. They'll be fine. We have that attitude, and that shit is going to have to stop. We're going to have to stop being the second-rate people. We just get thrown anything, and we're just supposed to accept it because we're used to it. We're going to have to start liking and getting a taste for some upscale shit. There's nothing wrong with us wanting nice shit. I always try to put black folks in a nice spot when they come see me. I like the surroundings to be nice, the stage, the lighting, just everything to be nice on some damn near Broadway shit. We got to start getting used to that. That's why when we did the Hidden Colors movies and we were doing promotion, and I opened up the door for a lot of promoters to come in and do some promotion and have screenings in their cities for Hidden Colors 3, I had one basic rule. You cannot have the screening in a janky spot. You have to have it in a movie theater. If you have a local movie theater connection in your city, an independent theater that you can rent out, you can have it there. But I had dozens of cats hit me up. Well, I know a community center. No, nigga. Well, I know a donut shop I can have it in. No, nigga. I know a warehouse down in Jersey. No, nigga. You're going to have it in a legitimate movie theater where people can sit down and eat popcorn and get soda and do the same thing they would do when they go see Spider-Man 6. And that's what they did, and it came off without a hitch. People enjoyed it. See, we got to start competing. We got to be in a position where you respect your audience enough, you respect your customers enough, where you compete. We got to start competing with other people in the dominant society, because we talked about that in Hidden Colors 3. We got this whole thing where we throw some janky shit up and say, okay, it's black, so support it because it's black. And that's not how you're supposed to operate. I don't want people to support me just because I'm black. I really don't. I want you to support what I do because it's crisp and it's thorough and it's exceptional. Don't throw me a bone. I don't look for nobody to throw me a bone. Fuck with me because my shit is hot. And I try to make the hottest shit and have the hottest events possible so that people's experience is a very lovely and it's a very pleasant experience. And that's the attitude that we have to have. We have to respect our audience. I have the utmost respect for my audience. Even people that I clown, like my man Jay Slim. There's a running joke with the poet Jay Slim. Jay Slim came to my lecture in Atlanta. I brought the brother on stage. I got the utmost respect for that brother. We clown him, but you get clowned. He does funny shit. But the respect is there. You understand? So you gotta respect your audience, family, when we did Hidden Colors in New York at the movie theater, Brother Kaba, when people came out, Brother Kaba was there to greet and take photos with everybody and really thank them for coming out. People appreciate that. That's respecting the audience, man. You're going that extra mile. In Atlanta, when we had the Hidden Color screening out there, David Banner was there greeting the people. That's respect for the audience. In Beverly Hills, when Hidden Colors premiere out here, I'm out there in Beverly Hills chopping it up with everybody. That's respect for the audience, man. You got to respect your customers to the point where you can chop it up with them and just show them that you're going to go that extra mile to make sure that they have a good experience, especially with a black audience. So we got to get into the habit of that. Now, understand this. Now, there's a difference between a real customer and somebody who's undercover sabotaging. There, you have a lot of saboteurs out here pretending to be customers. You got people out here, you know, you start a business and then you got the nigga who walks in. It's like that thing from that movie 40-Year-Old Virgin. There was a scene with Romney Malco and Kevin Hart where Kevin Hart comes in the store. It's like, hey, man, come on, man, you black. Come on, man, give me some free shit, man. Come on, man, be my nigga, man, be my nigga. A very funny scene. If you go back and look at that, very funny scene. And then Kevin Hart, you know, ended up threatening to come back and shoot the place up and all this old shit. Because we do that when we deal with each other. We have that pretend customer thing. But really, you low-key want to sabotage a black person who's working or who's owning something so they can get back down in that barrel with you. So that's not a real customer. You don't have to respect a saboteur. But if you see somebody who's genuinely supporting you, you got to give them that respect. Respect that customer. And I respect my audience because if people are coming to see me from miles away, people are coming in driving 4 and 5 hours to see me, I'm going to show them the utmost respect. I'm going to make sure the venue you're in is nice. The seats are comfortable. You're going to find it easy. You're going to be able to park easy. I'm going to make sure everything is fly, especially for black folks, because nobody takes the time to show the black customer or the black audience that respect. This is why, you know, in a lot of stores that's owned by non-black people like Asians, Koreans, Arabs and stuff like that, these people have to talk to you from a bulletproof glass, not because the black customers are rowdy. It's because the people who come in those communities, they never had respect for the black customer anyway. Let's just keep it 100, because people talk about black people trying to rob these liquor stores and all that. But these people who come in, they didn't have respect for the black customer anyway. So that caused a reactionary effect. That's why they get got at. That's one of the main reasons why the community will get at you anytime they can get at you. If you want to be very honest about it, but I digress. But the name of the game is respecting your customer. If you're a business person, especially a black business person, respect your customer. Because the thing is, if you're a black business owner or a black promoter, you respect the white customers. When a white customer comes in, you roll out the red carpet. But the thing is, when the black customers come in, all of a sudden your service becomes subpar. So y'all got to cut that shit out. Treat your black audience just like you treat your white audience. Treat your black customers just like you treat your white customers. Because that's what I do. You feel me? Anyway, y'all, that's been today's episode of the Tariq Elite Radio Show. Glad everybody tuned in. Don't forget to go to TariqElite.com. Get some of that fresh gear. My lecture, the Code of Conduct lecture, will be available possibly next week when I get back home to LA. I will edit that and get that together for everybody. And we're going to put that up for instant available download. And I am out of here. I will holla. Peace.